Technorama episode 331 for January 18, 2012. Unpredictable.
This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
I want my flying car. It's 2012. Where are the flying cars?
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts to disregard all safety rules. Here are your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama for January 18th, 2012. This is a show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I'm Chuck Tomasi, and with me is Craig Stepp. Craig, what is the geek phrase of the day?
Geek phrase of the day? That wasn't what I was expecting. Okay. This is the podcast you're looking for.
Works for me. I just had to catch you off guard. You know, I've been listening to tech stuff, you know, with Jonathan Strickland, yeah. And he always comes up with one of those musical lyrics. Mm-hmm. So I thought I'd try the same thing on you. Just give me a random geek quote and we'll see if people can figure out where it's from.
Yeah, I have a bad feeling about this.
That's what I'm looking for. Yes.
There you go.
Very Technorama. Thank you very much. All right, coming up in this crazy episode, we can tell we're off to a great start. This episode of Technorama, we have a PSA about phone etiquette, 10 technologies Congress tried to kill and was unsuccessful, I presume. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Does Stephen Hawking have an equation for time travel? We will find out that and much more coming up right after this.
This is Dr. Michio Kaku, professor of theoretical physics, author of the new book, Physics of the Impossible. Yet, I can't even figure out Technorama.
Hello and welcome to Technorama. It's got a silicone skin that fits like a glove. The only thing that's exposed when it's all tight and sealed up, even if you put in the wide body adapter, it's still too squeezy on the silicone skin. There is a little rubber trapdoor. It's a very thin membrane and it impedes absolutely none.
Every once in a while, you know, raise it up or take it off and clean, you know, around it. But I love it. I love that rubbery silicone feel. However, I would always feel like it's going to slide in my hand with that chrome on the back.
It gets pretty slippery, especially if you've been eating Cheetos or something. Your hand gets a little greasy. This has a nice grippy feel, and you know, you could go out in the rain and this would be completely protected because it is practically watertight. Ah, the good old days. I wish I still had time to put some of those together. That was one of our better listener contributions.
We need an intern.
We need an intern. Oh, hey.
Yeah.
Someone who's willing to work for nothing.
Much like us.
That's right. Want to give out a shout out to the chat room /Google+. We are doing this as another Google Plus hangout this week. So if you're around on Sunday night at 9:30 Eastern time or 6:30 Pacific, join us. Just hop on Google+. You'll see Craig or me in the hangout, or you can follow the Technorama podcast because I'm usually starting it up with that one first.
So when you actually see us, you won't want to come back in.
Yeah, scary, scary stuff. That blends the chat room together with the video and all this other good stuff. And hopefully someday, crossing our fingers, if we have a inroad at Google, we can get on the on-air technology and share with even more people because the chat room does get filled up, or the Google Plus Hangout gets filled up. And then we're kind of stuck. Not everybody can join us, and that's a bummer. We want to share the love.
Yeah, and if you're somebody like Tim Elliott, he kind of takes up two slots in the Hangout.
So, quick shout-out to the chat room. Looking at the Google Plus Hangout, we have me and Craig, obviously. We have Matt Ryder. We have Tim Elliott, Tony Riggs. Welcome, welcome. And Zach Agulian. So, the rest of the slots should be filling up shortly. We forgot to make this public until the very last second. So, still learning our way around.
Yeah.
Looking at the birthday calendar, where is that thing this week? Here it is.
It's in your pocket. It's in your back pocket.
A back pocket? No, I don't sit on the birthday calendar. Birthday calendar we have. January 21st, Michael Rabelais, Stingray 42. I think I murder his last name every year, so apologies once again. January 22nd, TAW012294.
Oh, I want to know him.
Yeah, he's one of the stormtroopers with his ear went out, right?
TAW012294, where is your, why aren't you in your post?
January 23rd is two birthdays, Kathy Luke in Illinois and Chris Moody from the Podio Media Chat. Every time I see a podcast, I have to wonder, is it still around? Chris, if you're still listening, we'd love to hear from you. Send us a promo if you got one. And if you want to get your name on the birthday calendar, how do they do that, Craig?
Well, you can go to chuckchat.com/wiki, and it'll take you right there. So they make an account, and voila.
Or you can listen to our audio stream if you happen to be around, as I said, on 9:30. Join us in the Google Hangout, 9:30 Eastern Time. If you can't make it, you can still find us on iTunes, and hopefully someday we'll be on YouTube. On this day in history for January 18, 2012, it was on this date in 1535 that Spanish conquistador Francisco Pizarro founded Lima, the capital of Peru.
That same date in 1778, James Cook becomes the first known European to discover the Hawaiian Islands, which he names the Sandwich Islands.
Sandwich Islands. It was also today in 1788 that the first elements of the first fleet carrying 736 convicts from England to Australia arrives at Botany Bay. Botany Bay? Yes, I put that in there just for the Star Trek reference.
In 1884, Dr. William Price attempts to cremate the body of his infant son, Jesus Christ Price, setting a legal precedent for cremation in the United Kingdom.
The X-ray machine is exhibited for the first time on this date in 1896.
And President Theodore Roosevelt sends a radio message to King Edward VII, the first transatlantic radio transmission originating in the United States, on January 18, 1911.
Also on that same date, Eugene B. Eli lands on the deck of the USS Pennsylvania stationed in San Francisco Harbor. It's the first time an aircraft landed on a ship. On purpose. A 611-gram chondrite meteorite strikes a house near the village in Baxter in Stone County, Missouri today in 1916.
And today in 1919, Bentley Motors Limited is founded.
On this date in 1977, scientists identify a previously unknown bacterium as the cause of the mysterious Legionnaires' disease.
And just 15 years ago in 1997, Bjørg Ausland of Norway becomes the first person to cross Antarctica alone and unaided.
The Tagish Lake meteorite impact. What is this, meteorite day? Every January 18th, look up. The Tagish Lake meteorite impacts the Earth today in 2000.
And 7 years ago, the Airbus A380, the world's largest commercial jet, is unveiled at a ceremony in Toulouse, France.
And today, yes, today, January 18th, 2012, is the internet blackout to protest the Stop Online Piracy Act, the SOPA, and Protect IP Act, or the PIPA.
So I guess we'll you'll get this show on Thursday.
Happy birthday goes on this date in 1813 to Joseph Glidden, the American farmer who patented barbed wire.
Also born today in 1854 is Alexander Graham Bell's notable partner, Thomas Watson.
Turning 79 today, Ray Dolby, the American inventor of the Dolby noise reduction system. No, it wasn't Thomas Dolby.
And finally, actor Kevin Costner, the actor of Waterworld. No, I shouldn't bring that up, should I? Turns 57.
And that's the way it was on this day in history for January 18th, 2012.
Impending news, everyone!
All right, here's one of the better ones that I saw. You know how there's, general phone etiquette that you're supposed to turn your phone off or mute it when you're in a theater?
Or church.
Well, you wouldn't want to be that guy. The man responsible for his ringing cell phone that silenced a performance of the New York Philharmonic earlier this week says he hasn't slept since. Good for him. Patron X, as he's known, is a 60-something businessman exec seated in the front row. He interrupted Mahler's Symphony No. 9 with his iPhone's marimba ring. You know, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah.
That's what I use for my alarm to wake me up in the morning, so that would work. Yeah. Inciting the ire of the conductor, Alan Gilbert, who stopped the show cold.
Wow.
You can imagine how devastating it is to know You had a hand in that, said a 20-year-old orchestra subscriber who was pelted with angry shouts from audience members while he fumbled for his phone for several long seconds. Speaking to the New York Times, Patron X blamed his brand new iPhone's alarm clock, which he claims didn't even know existed.
Yes, I don't believe it.
But he apologized just the same. Quote, mm-hmm. I hope the people at the performance and members of the orchestra can certainly forgive me for this whole event, he said. I apologize to the whole audience. The man also apologized to Gilbert, the conductor, when the two spoke on the phone yesterday afternoon. Gilbert said he felt sorry for Patron X. He felt sorry that he had to go through this and accepted the apology. In light of this incident, do yourself a favor next time you're at the Avery Fisher Hall and mute your phone, or do like I do and change your ringtone to Mahler's number 9, just in case.
Yeah. Change it to match the show you're at.
That's right.
Hey, the reason he hasn't slept is because Alan Gilbert is actually watching him in his window.
No, he still hasn't figured out how to turn his alarm off, and all night long it's going, do, 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 do.
What is that?
Gosh, darn it.
I got to get those birds out of my attic. We went to go see Puss in Boots the other day in the Dollar Theater.
Did you turn off your phone?
No, it wasn't me. Listen. I'm trying to explain something here.
A friend of yours.
Yeah, a friend. No, it wasn't that we heard anything, you know, to distract the movie, but people were flipping their phones on, and the screen is so bright, it's like you can't help but see it out of the corner of your eye. So it's not just muting it. Don't freaking use it.
We are saying. Yeah.
Tell me, is that not annoying? Person in front of you starts flipping their phone on in a dark room.
Yeah, I mean,
come on.
It is.
Yeah,
there's a special place in hell for people like that.
I even spoke up. I said, dude, turn off your phone.
No, text him and tell him to turn it off.
Well, it was a flip phone for crying out loud. Not even a smartphone. So anyway, okay, that's all I got to say about that.
You like Legos? We like Legos. Mm-hmm, so does this gentleman. He's made a 19-foot tall model of a Saturn V rocket.
Wow.
This is just awesome. And if you look really, really closely, up on the gantry near where the astronauts get in is a little R2-D2.
Nice. I can see something up there.
I don't remember NASA approving it.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I had to look closely. I'm like, what is that? Oh my goodness, it's an R2-D2.
Oh, I see. He's got more pictures down at the bottom here.
It looks like the one of these drawings looks like a 3D rendering. Maybe he had a computer-generated model to build it out or plan it out before he actually built it.
Well, they do have that app. Lego has that app where you can kind of virtually build the whole thing, and then actually it'll take that because it knows what pieces you used and and order the whole thing. Now this would be quite expensive, I'm sure.
You went to Kennedy, right? You've been to the Space Center?
Yeah, a long time ago. Yeah.
You remember seeing the Saturn V? It might not have been indoors when you were there. I think they just did that right before we got there in, what was it, 2005? Yeah,
when I actually went there. It was in the 90s.
Okay.
We went to see the shuttle, but we were in Titusville.
I think the Saturn V was outdoor until like a year or two before we got there.
They had the rocket garden.
Yeah, the rocket garden where they had the Mercury and the Redstone and all the other ones.
Sounds like a bunch of beers you just named.
Or bands. Woo, Redstone!
Saturn!
19 feet high, 120,000 bricks, 250 hours. There it is.
Wow, 250. Now, you know, I wonder how much lighter his wallet is.
250 hours. I equate that to what about?
He must be out of work.
50 podcast episodes. Or no, 25 podcast episodes.
Hey, I like it with the picture he's got with the NASA van there and the astronauts are coming out.
Yep.
Like the film crew's there, everything.
Microsoft invents a GPS to avoid crime-ridden areas. I don't know where they're going to get their data from, but this ought to be interesting. The thing that I found interesting was it says they filed a patent, more from the document filed with the United States Patent and Trademark Office. A route can be developed for a person taking into account factors that specifically affect a pedestrian, such as being in an unsafe neighborhood or in an area subject to harsh temperatures.
Okay.
What is unclear, at least from my reading of this patent, which isn't written by anything resembling a human, is what kind of crime statistics a GPS might choose to use.
Well, there's a lot of sexual predators here.
Stay away.
Hey, my first thought when I saw this article, I was thinking, boy, the Griswolds could have used this.
This is supposed to be a feature that benefits pedestrians. Tell me when the last time you used a GPS to go walking around was.
Go walking around? No, not really.
No, exactly. This is targeting the wrong market if that's what they're after.
Well, Google Maps on the phone, on my Android, yes. rather, it'll let you do GPS indoors. Like if you went into a mall and they have their map laid out, it'll tell you where the stores are and everything out, and you can go straight to them, which is kind of neat. Actually, I went to a mall this weekend, a pretty big one, and I was like, I'm sitting there trying to pull up Google Maps just to see if they had that feature for the mall, but they did not. Looked like I was walking around a big parking lot.
Yeah, like when you're driving out in the country and the road isn't exactly where the GPS thinks. I'm driving through cornfields.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And it starts telling you to take the next right on some county road you just drove over.
Actually, I've been pretty happy with a map updating.
Yeah, once I started using a GPS on my phone.
What do you use now?
I've been using Motion X Drive for a long time.
On the iPhone?
Probably the last year or so, yeah.
Okay. Was it free? Or just
the app is free.
Uh-huh.
And it updates quite frequently. And if you want turn-by-turn instructions, it's like $20 a year, which is ridiculously cheap.
That's not bad.
Yeah. And I haven't found the maps to be too unreliable. I mean, they're better than my TomTom is after 5 years.
You still have that thing?
Mm-hmm.
I was just watching your video the other day where you were with the podcaster.
Oh, yeah. Now that it's on the YouTube channel, it's all easy. Hacks and strange stories. From listener Mike Wills, he sent us a link to Hackaday, which, you know, I really need to subscribe to one of these days because there's a lot of good stuff on this site.
Yeah, I actually do subscribe to it. I come up on some of these things. It's good stuff.
He sent us a link to a Matchbox launcher that reacts to emergency band radio dispatch. So if you watch the little video online, it's kind of cool. You hear this emergency call come in, and all of a sudden, out of this thing that looks like a half a desk with a piece of paper mocked up with a fire station,
mm-hmm.
You hear... all units report to whichever there's an emergency on 35th. And the call is coming in over the radio. And all of a sudden, this Hot Wheels comes shooting out this cabinet-looking thing.
That's awesome.
Like, the fire department is on the way.
Does it shoot the cars out and they kind of fall like when you roll a Matchbox car off of the table?
Yeah, that's pretty much what it looks like. Okay. It says, Jeff and his wife put together a firefighter-themed birthday celebration for their son. As he's not entirely handy in the kitchen, Jeff decided not to lend a hand with the baking or cake decorating. But he didn't forego the opportunity to combine a couple of different projects to make the Matchbox car launcher that responds to emergency band radio. Since he's an amateur radio enthusiast, he already had a scanner to monitor the airwaves. Apparently, there's a band just for relaying dispatch messages to emergency vehicles. He set the radio equipment to only monitor that channel. An Arduino was added to the mix, taking measurements of the voltage level and the scanner's audio output. Wow, this guy really went all out for his son.
No kidding.
When it's driven high enough, the Arduino trips the toy car launcher. The car launcher itself is a pretty nifty setup. There are 5 chutes at the top of the ramp that fit a car. Timeout. Well, I'm thinking about this. Speaking of Hot Wheels, thank you very much. Craig sent me a DeLorean Back to the Future Hot Wheels car this week. You get the cheering squad of the day.
I did see somebody post about that thing, and I went, oh, that's cool. I didn't know that it was there, so I went to order it, and my first thought was, I got to order two. So.
So if we make something like this and we can get the Hot Wheels up to 88 miles an hour, does it go back in time?
Yeah, well, the problem is we have to go buy the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids toy so we can shrink ourselves to get in it.
Oh, yeah, and put the Mr. Fusion on there so we can get back.
Yeah, it doesn't have, it's like they took it off. Oh, well.
Also, in the Hacks and Strange Stories, you know, we love ThinkGeek, and they had the canned unicorn meat not too long ago.
Tasty.
Well, now, on at least 3 different sites, we have a way to make your own sparkling unicorn poop cookies. Rainbow Ooh. Colored.
Yeah, it sounds so tasty.
I just got to leave that picture up there.
Good Lord. That's
looks like it makes you sick from sugar, doesn't it?
It's making me sick just looking at it.
This unicorn poop, in reality, has a funny story. I told my mom that I was making some unicorn sneezes, and she said, when are you going to make your unicorn... well, a word that's not too user-friendly for this show, because we want to keep our cleaning rating, but it's it's a synonym for fecal matter, and starts with S and ends with T. And then it hit me. Great idea, Mom. I'll take Dirty Spin and become Unicorn Poop instead. She doesn't want to take credit for encouraging me, but I still thank her. Ha ha. By the way, these things are sparkly to the max, even more so than any art project. I wish that video would have captured... Is that what sparkling is? The sugar in there? Oh my gosh.
Sugar. I like the little stars. Little mushroom. All right, mushroom. I mean, marshmallows, stars.
Looks like you get type 2 diabetes eating these things.
Yeah. Your body, your adrenal glands will be trying to get that out of not adrenal.
Your insulin? Yeah. Your Arduino glands?
Yeah. Arduino glands.
That's what geeks have.
That's right.
And our final Hacks and Strange Story is titled Calling In Stupid. Staff members of the Manhattan High School of Hospitality Management managed to tack on an extra week to her school-sanctioned spring break by convincing her employer that her daughter had died.
What?
Yeah, this is another one of those excuses you can only use once. Listen to this. Parent coordinator Joan Barnett fooled the school by having one of her daughters phone an official and claim her sister had died of a heart attack in Costa Rica, requiring Barnett to travel there for the funeral. Barnett went to the extra morbid mile and forwarded the school a forged death certificate, a document which is required prior to the approval of bereavement days. According to an investigator, a school official raised a red flag after spotting discrepancies in the certificate's font alignment. A phone call to the Costa Rican government confirmed the certificate was fake. Hello? Hi. I'm calling about this death certificate. I want to confirm that my employee's sister has passed away. No, senor. She is quite no muerte. Thank you. However, faced with the fact, Barnett doubled down, insisting her daughter was dead, and provided a second forged certificate as proof.
Nice.
Unwilling to go as far as actually killing her daughter for the sake of the case, rookie mistake, Barnett had no choice but to plead guilty to misdemeanor forgery and exit stage left. Wow. If this is a copy of the actual document, I can kind of see how, like, some of the dates and things got wrapped when they shouldn't have.
File number 00000.
Maybe that's Costa Rican Health Department, Bureau of Vital Statistics, Certificate of Death. If it was from Costa Rica, it'd be in Spanish.
Yeah, right.
Don't do it, people. You don't need an extra week of vacation that badly, do you?
We're not podcasting tonight because Chuck has died.
And Craig has the certificate. Yeah. In PDF.
Yeah. Yeah, form fillable PDF.
It's like your taxes. In the Remember When section, we have 10 technologies that Congress tried to kill. Oh, the joys of this. Number one, the video cassette recorder. Who wanted to kill it? Of course, the movie studios mainly. They thought that once movies were available at home, no one would ever want to watch at the theaters again.
And ironically, it was a big source of revenue for them after a while.
Yeah, we'll get to some of that again later. There's a recurring theme that goes on. Number two, the phonograph. Who wanted to kill it? None other than John Philip Sousa, the guy who wrote Stars and Stripes Forever.
What?
He testified before Congress that both the gramophone and the player piano would put musicians out of business. Mm-hmm. How did that work out? Well, in the end, Congress passed the Milder Bill, which simply assured musicians and composers royalties from recordings. Good idea.
Yeah.
Number three, genetically modified food. Who wanted to kill it? Environmentalists and food safety advocates, because Congress had tried many times over the years to regulate or ban certain types of genetically modified foods, and many bills have been introduced over the years. How did it work out? In general, U.S. law remains laxer than those in most other countries.
Hmm.
All right, here's one for you, Craig. Number four, Congress wanted to ban internet gambling.
Yeah, that was a big issue for me.
He's still in therapy.
It says the feds themselves. Who wanted to kill it? The feds themselves. The Justice Department was very alarmed by the rise of online gambling, especially as run by offshore operators, and concerned that gambling could serve as a cover for money laundering. Well, I think it also looks like a missed tax revenue. That's what I'm reading.
It could.
And number five was the Wizinator.
The what?
The Wizinator.
Do you remember hearing about this?
I can't say so.
Who wanted to kill it? Pretty much everybody. After Minnesota Vikings running back Ontario Smith was caught at an airport with one of these devices, which is basically a fake male genitalia, that allows you to fool drug urine tests. Congress held hearings on May 17, 2005. Representative Bart Stupak held up the Wizinator advertising and spoke against the national scandal of simulated urination.
I could just see him standing up in Congress shaking it. We should ban these, you know.
How will we stop the flow? Demanded Stupak as a room exploded in unintended giggles.
I know this is a hard issue to tackle.
We need to pinch this off before it gets started. Number 6, MP3 players. Yes, actually, this was more like a random casualty of reckless shooter. Congress actually tried to pass a few laws that protected copyright owners in the past, which were so broadly written that they would have banned a wide range of technologies, including MP3 players. Therefore, there was the Induce Act, which would have banned any technology that induces people to violate copyright. Mm-hmm. How it worked out, so far, none of these bills have passed, so your iPod is safe. Yeah. Here's an oldie but a goodie. Number 7, Congress tried to ban margarine. Who wanted to kill it? The dairy farmers. Margarine was introduced in 1874 after a French chemist named Hippolyte Mejemori, I think, figured out a way to make cheap butter substitute from beef fat.
Hmm.
The dairy industry freaked out.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Because the much cheaper margarine threatened to drive smaller dairies out of business. They tried passing various state laws, but some of those were shot down in court. How did it work out? Dairy farmers went to Congress, and there were hearings that culminated in the Margarine Act of 1886, which imposed a tax of 2 cents per pound of margarine. Although the original bill was called for a 10-cent tax instead, this was followed by the Margarine Act of 1906, in which the federal government raised the tax for margarine that was dyed yellow to look like real butter. It's not nice to fool Mother Nature.
Yeah.
Number 8, embryonic stem cells. Who wanted to kill pro-life advocates mainly? In 1996, Congress passed the Dickey Wicker Amendment, not to be confused with the Wizinator. The Dickey Wicker Amendment, which bans all federal research in which human embryos are created, destroyed, or put at risk of harm. This law, which remains on the books, essentially prevented most embryonic items stem cell research. How did it work out? In 2001, then policy in which 61 cell lines of existing embryonic stem cells would be allowed for federally funded research. Congress tried to pass a bill expanding this policy, but Bush vetoed it. Since then, President Obama has tried to abolish the Bush policy, but Obama's executive order has been tied up in federal courts. Digital audio tape recorders is number 9. Here comes the music industry again.
When these came out, I remember looking at, wow, this is pretty cool, because I've done a lot of stuff with cassettes in the past, you know, all kinds of weird and crazy things. And then, like, wow, these are cool digital cassettes, but never kind of, never really took off much, I guess, unless you were in the studio.
Yeah, and for backups on computers.
Well, I was thinking the audio tape, not the digital.
It's still the same tape. It's the same media. It's a DAT.
I know. Read it, monkey boy.
Okay, Congress held hearings throughout the late 1980s over whether to stop this digital technology from coming to consumers. Music industry lobbyists demanded that DAT players be fitted with technology that would degrade the sound quality of any music copied to them. Kind of defeats the point.
Oh, now we're back to cassettes.
And that sales of DAT tapes included a royalty payment to the music industry. How did that work out? Well, as Sanford's Mark Lemsey puts it, digital audio tapes were then subject to compulsory licensing scheme and were never heard from again by mass market consumers. The technology flopped once it was put under the control of the content industry.
Hey, the degrading, they actually add pop and hiss back into the recording. Yeah. Nope, don't
and
do
wobble.
That.
We'll you have to banned. Put warping into it. Long time.
Hello Kitty assault rifles. No, just the assault weapons.
Number 10 is assault weapons. Who wanted to kill the gun control advocates? The ban on semi-automatic weapons in 1984 is a major achievement of the Clinton administration's first 2 years, and probably a huge reason why the Democrats lost control over both houses of Congress last year. How did that work out? The federal assault weapons ban was scheduled to sunset after 10 years, and it did. The ban expired in 2004, and attempts to renew it were unsuccessful. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. Because, you know, everybody needs an assault rifle to go hunting.
All right, we're going to take a quick break with the Media Corner and come right back.
This is Dr. Michio Kaku, professor of theoretical physics, author of the new book, Physics of the Impossible. Yet, I can't even figure out Technorama.
Thank you. Excited about the news surrounding the Large Hadron Collider? Want to get in on the action with your own subatomic discoveries but can't get to Geneva, Switzerland all that often? Now you can do the same experiments as the professional physicist with HADI, the Little Hadron Collider from WAMCO.
Do you want to know what it is?
HADI is the perfect gift for any physicist or people who just like to play with potentially dangerous things. Just 1 meter in diameter and operating on a single 9-volt battery, HADI allows the scientist in your family to look for things like the elusive Higgs boson. Just add ice cubes in the hopper and salt water in the reservoir, then flip the switch. Through a series of systems like the Mini Proton Synchrotron, the Super Mini Proton Synchrotron, and the Technorometron, your little HADI can start to unlock the secrets of the universe right in your own home. And HADI doesn't cost billions and take over a decade to assemble like the Large Hadron Collider. HADI assembles in minutes and is available for just 3 easy payments of $99.95. Order your little Hadron Collider today. Shipping and handling not included. 9-volt battery sold separately. Warning, people with pacemakers should not use the Little Hadron Collider.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the media corner.
First up in the media corner, we have Star Wars on a budget. Actually, it's the budget paper from Star Wars. It's their...
I thought this was going to be the budget of how much Vader had to pay to build the Death Star.
Those things are cheap, you know.
These contractors are killing me.
So the date of this budget was in 1976. For salary and wages, they paid $750,000.
This is the budget for the movie.
The total salary and wages came to $2.8 million. The final script was $50,000. Somebody didn't get paid enough for that, unless he paid himself.
Yeah.
Score and music, $100,000. Oh, man, John Williams got ripped on that first one, didn't he?
Yeah.
Transportation and Tunisia location costs were $700,000. Probably the most expensive thing on here was the special effects and models of spaceships and robots at $3.9 million, which all told came to a nice sum of $11 million.
Even.
Not and 13 cents.
Yeah.
As of 1980, the revenues...
It was, by the way, it says $1 million over initial budget.
But they still came out $147 million in the black.
Yeah.
The some of the costs were just astronomical. Like they took in $510 million in box office receipts, but the exhibitors cost them $260 million.
Wow.
What in the world was that? Printing and advertising, $102 million.
That's where the money goes, man. Look at that.
Wow.
Hey, but look, total profits, $147 million. Hey, by the way, look down below.
Yeah.
Alec Guinness made out. Against all the other actors.
He was the big name.
Yeah. He got like 3.3 million.
The other guys were pretty unknown.
He got 3.3 million, right? He wasn't even in the movie the whole time.
That's right.
And then Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher get a quarter of the profits at 368,000. I think somebody needs to renegotiate.
There was an image of Ian McKellen wearing a red t-shirt that says, "I'm Gandalf and Magneto. Get over it." And then right next to it was a picture of Harrison Ford wearing one that says, "I'm Han Solo, Indiana Jones, and Blade Runner. I am effing over it."
Yeah. I was wondering about that. I wondered if that was for real.
It definitely looks shopped to me.
Yeah. Alec Guinness got a warm one that said, "I am Obi-Wan," and didn't he play Doctor Who at one time? Or somebody like that? Oh, well. Get over it. Yeah, well.
Here's a man we've talked to, Richard Garriott, a.k.a. Lord British. He's coming out with a documentary officially titled Man on a Mission. Firmly ensconced in the geeky pantheon of computer legends since high school, Richard Garriott can afford to pursue his dreams, even the wildly impossible ones. For instance, following in his astronaut father's footsteps. Did you know his father was an astronaut?
I did, because you had him on for an interview.
Yep, he is now a second-generation astronaut.
Just going up once, are you considered an astronaut? If that's not your real career?
I'd list it. If I went up in space, I'd list it as an astronaut. There's a lot of training that goes into that.
What was I saying about Buzz, Mark and Mike?
If your name is Neil Armstrong, you really don't need a whole one-page resume. You just need to put first man on the moon.
Yeah, that's it. Nice.
That's pretty good. I am looking forward to this. Should be out in 2012. Man on a Mission. Keep your eyes out for that.
Hmm. Cool.
He was at DragonCon last year. I haven't checked out the list. Is he around this year?
Wait, he was? Oh, that's right. We were wanting to catch up with him or something.
Yeah, we didn't have any time last year.
Yeah, it kind of got away from us, didn't it?
Cool stuff from the Star Trek universe.
Speaking of astronauts.
Right.
Actually, this is a couple of things that caught my eye from ThinkGeek. One was the Enterprise plushie, which admittedly it's kind of odd shape because it's fuzzy, but it has the nacelles blink. It's only like $25. It was kind of neat. I don't know if my wife would appreciate me sleeping with one. But the next thing I thought was really cool, and I would love to put outside my little office door here. It was a door chime, which looks like the little control panel on the original series. Yeah, and it did. It includes the emotion-sensitive door whoosh, red alert klaxon, and boatswain whistle.
Yay!
I like that.
I want a whoosh on my door. And turning to the Geek Library, I have something from my dad.
Oh, really?
Yes. This is a PDF scan. This is an actual document that people got when they came from Italy to the U.S. to help them pronounce words, phrases. Okay, so I have to read this kind of sideways. It rotated the PDF a little funny. But it was an Italian translation to English. But you can't just spell the English words in English because the letters don't make sense. They spell it phonetically in Italian.
Oh, great. Okay.
So in Italian, it would be, farri ripetero. Okay. It's like, I need to repeat that. Well, it's spelled out A-I, which is I.
I.
B-E-G. Bag. And then it says I-U. U. T-U. Two. R-I-P-I-T. Repeat. I beg you to repeat.
I beg you to repeat.
Right. It's not, the Italians' fault that they speak the way we do. They do. We do. I do say we do.
Yeah, right.
It's these books that they sent over.
That's funny.
L-U-C-H. Look. A-H-E-D. Ahead. Look ahead.
You know what? If you're not on the watching Chuck do this, speak, it's funny just to watch him stretch his mouth out trying to.
I believe it, and I am very glad of it. You got to see the way I put these PDFs on our website so you can see them.
Where are the nuclear whistles?
Exactly. What was one of my favorites? I do not believe you. Well, there's some nouns in here, like how to say horses and things. Parts of the bedroom, parts of your body.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, these are great.
Look at the picture. It's all numbered.
Yeah, so you know what numbers go on the other side. Good luck.
Now, you said this is some of your family's book. Is this, where'd your dad get this book?
He got it from my uncle, his brother, who's putting together all this family tree information.
Mm-hmm.
And he's coming across old pictures from aunts and uncles and other relatives. He came across this little booklet, and we just had a riot of a time reading some of these things.
That's pretty cool.
There's one that says, Douglas will probably shame me for my Italian.
Yeah.
Favoriami del pane e del formaggio. Okay. Something about bread and cheese is what I get out of that.
Someone cut the cheese?
Now, pane is bread and formaggio is cheese. It's give me some bread, and the cheese is spelled C-I-S, right?
Sounds like he should be holding a gun when he says that.
C-I-S in Italian actually spells cheese.
Give me some bread and cheese.
If you please.
If you please.
So now you can hold up a bread and cheese shop, I guess.
That's funny.
This is great. You got to read these things. I'd be curious to see if anybody has one of those for another language. This is probably circa the 19, the teens, 100 years ago, this document came out.
And can you post that online? Is that somewhere where everybody can see it?
Yes, it is. If you click through the show notes, it'll pull up on our site.
Sweet.
From Phil Clark, we have 10 predictions from 100 years ago that came true.
Okay.
This was from the BBC, and then there's another one that I had on from Geeks Are Sexy.
Okay.
So in 1900, an American civil engineer called John Elfreth Watkins made a number of predictions about what would life be like in 2000. So we're here to see how he did. He had predicted digital color photography, although he didn't use the word digital. He did say that photographs would be telegraphed from any distance. So if there's a battle in China 100 years hence, snapshots of this would be available in the newspaper in an hour in full color.
Well, that's really true. That's pretty true.
Yeah, that's pretty true. He predicted the rising height of Americans. He said Americans would be taller by 1 or 2 inches. And he got it pretty close because, due to nutrition and whatnot, people did get taller.
Hey, and there was no projection on their waist size.
Yeah, by considerable percentage points.
He got that wrong.
He predicted mobile phones. His quote was, "Wireless telephone and telegraph circuits will span the world. A husband in the middle of the Atlantic will be able to converse with his wife sitting in her boudoir in Chicago. We will be able to telephone to China quite as readily as we now talk from New York to Brooklyn."
Well, he didn't predict the Chinese blocking everything.
You beat me to it, man. You beat me to it. Pre-prepared meals. Ready-cooked meals will be bought from establishments similar to our bakeries of today. Slowing population growth. There will probably be 350 million to 500 million people in America. It's just a wee bit too high.
By the way, the prepared meals, I'm thinking of pizzas.
Pre-prepared meals.
Yeah.
How about like fast food joints?
Right down the street, you know.
McDonald's is a pre-prepared meal.
Is it really?
Is it really a meal? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
He predicted television. Man will see around the world. Persons and things of all kinds will be brought within focus of cameras connected electrically with screens at opposite ends of circuits. Thousands of miles at a span. That's pretty... He predicted tanks, huge forts on wheels, will dash across open spaces at the speed of express trains of today. Bigger fruit, strawberries as large as apples, will be eaten by our great-great-grandchildren.
Well, okay. I can see the pumpkins, you know, when they have the 1,200-pound pumpkins or,
yeah,
you know, those huge things, but I don't know.
Trains will run 2 miles a minute normally. Express trains, 150 miles an hour, which is kind of weird because exactly 100 years after writing those words to the very month, Amtrak's flagship high-speed rail line, the Acela Express, opened between Boston and Washington, D.C., which reached top speeds of 150 miles an hour.
That's amazing.
That is amazing. He predicted...
It's like a frickin' Nostradamus.
He predicted no more letters CX or Q... in the everyday alphabet, which was a little wrong.
Okay.
These are four he didn't get quite right. Everybody will walk 10 miles a day. No more cars in large cities. And no mosquitoes or flies.
He didn't predict flying cars, though.
Close, but no cigar.
Yeah.
So for 100 years ago, that's pretty amazing. Kind of sounds like what Dr. Kaku was talking to us about when we interviewed him.
Yeah, right.
And people probably thought this guy was a quack.
Speaking of quacks...
No, this guy's not a quack. This is Stephen Hawking, man. He's a smart guy.
No, he's very smart.
The quack who wrote him, though. Sue Massey, or Macy, personal assistant to Professor S.W. Hawking, to a Johnny Davis, sent this out. So Johnny Davis writes in and he says, "Dear Dr. Hawking, do you have a formula or equation for time travel?" And Sue, the personal assistant, writes back, per Hawking, says, "Thank you for your recent facts. I do not have any equations for time travel. If I had, I would win the national lottery every week."
Hey, by the way, Johnny Davis had actually built a time machine, was just waiting for the equation to plug in to make it all work.
Dang it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's funny.
All right, that takes us to the end. I want to remind everybody that there will be no show next week. We won't have a January 25th show for Craig's birthday, unless you want to just hang out and do a birthday show. I will be out of town this next week, so I cannot do the Technorama and get news gathering stuff over the week, unfortunately. But we could still hang out for your birthday. That might be fun. In the meantime... We always appreciate your support. If you like the show, there are many ways to show your love. You can call the listener line at 206-222-CHAT. That's 206-222-2428. Email us, technorama@chuckchat.com, or on Twitter, C. Tomasi, Step K, Technorama. You know where to find us. Go to the website, chuckchat.com, and find all that good stuff. There's also a donation in the tip jar. We want to thank Man Mar for all his great blog content during the week. We also thank Google for the Google Plus Hangouts, letting us hang out here and share with friends and whatnot. Having a good old time with that as we still learn what buttons to click and what not to click. This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech. Find out more at friendsintech.com. We're also affiliated with all the great shows over at farpointmedia.com. Check them out at farpointmedia.com. There's a whole bunch of stuff over there. If you're not finding something you enjoy, you're not looking hard enough. Until next time, tell a friend about Technorama, and what time is it, Craig?
It's time for 101.
Good. Then give me a binary high five.
We must leave now, for we are needed elsewhere. But we wish you Godspeed.